He looks like the love child of Sacha Baron Cohen and Benoit Assuracoto.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, patrons. Happy Friday. We've made it to the end of another week. Here's another pod for you. James, how are you?
I'm very well, Sujan. And yourself?
Yeah, man. Feeling chilled. I'm about to go away for the weekend with the fam into the forest. And it's just going to be a bit gadget-free and fresh air and, yeah, getting on the bike. No, I don't ride a bicycle as a rule. I don't have a bike here. I don't ride. Some of the UK listeners will know what Centre Parks is like. In the forest, country resort, right?
You get a bicycle. I can't believe how much Centre Parks comes up on this podcast,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, fucking too much. But when you, if anybody, the point is not Centre Park. The point is riding a bicycle when you don't normally ride a bicycle, you fucking get sore ass pretty fucking quick. Like, it takes only about an hour of riding a bike before you realise, shit, like, I've got quite a delicate underneath. Because it's very
thanks for sharing.
Yeah, it's something that you need to get used to riding a bike. So I'm looking forward to getting some fresh air over the weekend. There's no football, so it's a chance to rewind and, yeah, just chill and think. And I need to finish reading Pranil's thread that he put out yesterday about
managing. Oh, our man Late Riser put out a super little thread last night. I did retweet it myself.
Yeah, I read the first three or four and I was like, I need to sit down and read this properly when I can concentrate because it sounds really interesting. I'm going to be watching a bit on Berry, doing a bit of research on catching up with the rest of Black Box.
We can probably integrate that a little bit into Monday's podcast, what he says, yeah. Actually, and the idea of we don't know yet and it's okay and not being stuck into a plan and him learning from his lessons from last season and stuff. You know, we've all got our opinion on Ronaldo right now, right? But none of us know.
No.
I mean, we all know he's going to score goals, but none of us know if it's enough to justify 12.5 million, right?
Exactly that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to just consuming a bit of content and getting some fresh air at the weekend. England did all right yesterday.
Yeah, really,
he says,
really impressed
having not watched
that.
It at all.
Yeah. So Stein, I said, did you watch England last night? He said, no. I said, and he said, what was the score? I said, we lost 3-0. He's like, they're hungry. I said, no, mate, no bother. It obviously had the potential to be a very tricky fixture because they were right in the Euros, right? I mean, they were in that group of death. They were losing for six minutes and then failed to qualify from that terrible group with Portugal, France and Germany. So it had the potential to be a really, really tricky tie. Obviously, full capacity stadium there and stuff. The first half was a non-event. We kind of dominated the ball, but we never really opened them up. But once we went in front in the second half, we played some good stuff. It was real energy, determination. I loved Phillips and Rice's performance. The determination to try and win the ball higher over and over again eventually paid dividends for England. Jack was great. We all want to see him in the England team, right? He was terrific. Mason Mount, quietly very good. Raz was great. Shut a lot of people up again. Harry missed loads of chances. Honestly, Harry Kane could have got four last night. Really, really good second half. Unfortunately, dominated again by, and I hate to say it, predictably, what happened off the pitch again. Where I know the kind of English media or not, that's incorrect, within the England camp, they were quick to play down any fears of anything happening, you know, give people a fresh chance. They got massive warnings after the Euros. They've actually been given a 2-game suspended sentence of no fans behind closed doors. But because this is a FIFA competition rather than a UEFA competition, that actually doesn't come into force probably for a couple of years. So it's so dumb. So they were still allowed a full capacity. I suspect they probably won't be at their next match. It's just, unfortunately, so predictable when we go to these countries, it's going to happen. I'll tell you what I do love is every time we go to one of these places and they try and racially abuse our players, we fucking bury these teams now.
We
five
do.
In Montenegro, 6 in Bulgaria, 4 last night. I mean, 4-0 in Hungary is bloody impressive.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that there seems to be a real motivation. Mind you, the players seemed unaware of what was happening last night. I mean, they were obviously aware after the first goal, there was lots of cups raining down. You might have seen images of Jack Grealish and Declan Rice pretending to drink out of cups. I can tell you for a fact, those two have definitely never been to a fucking festival, because you would never pick up an empty cup and try and drink out of it, mate, because you don't know what's been in it. Declan Rice is there pretending to swig someone else's piss. Yeah, not advisable under a COVID era, I'm afraid to say. But the images looked good in terms of they were mocking them back and stuff. Mm. It's just so disappointing. I think it needs to get to the point now where they say to UEFA, look, this is what's happening. Do you know what? You can't be doing these fucking five-figure fines and shit anymore. It doesn't work. Just literally say, if this happens again, you're out.
Simple.
That's it. I don't think it's a throw them out. I think it has to be, you have to understand, the next time you do this, you're eliminated. No ifs, no buts, you're out. So make it clear, tell them. And then it's up to them, the Hungarian FA and others, to deal with their people. Because quite clearly, unfortunately, it paints a bad reputation and picture of Hungarians. I'm sure they're not all like that. But clearly, you knew that group of ultras behind the goal where they're all wearing black and stuff, what they're going to be like. Stop them going.
Yeah.
They clearly cater to their needs. They're all together for every game. So you plan that shit. You let them dictate what's happening in a new 65,000-seat purpose-built stadium. What do you expect?
Mm.
So and it's not just Hungary. It needs to be sold to these people. That's it now. We have to go down a zero tolerance line and say, the next time, you're out.
Yep.
And I would like that to be not just you're out, because Hungary probably ain't going to qualify for the World Cup. So it's no good just throwing them out. You tell them, yeah, and you're out the next one as well.
Mm, no qualifying, nothing. Because they make, obviously, the Football Association makes money from the qualifiers in terms of gate receipts and all that kind of stuff. That will hurt a little bit more.
Of course it would. So now you're telling Hungary with that new stadium, oh yeah, by the way, okay, you're probably not going to qualify. You're going to lose one or two games. No. You're going to lose the next one and the possibility of hosting a France or an England or someone similar that's going to make you a shitload of money. No, you're not having it. Mm. You're not having it. I should add at this point, and we did say it enough in the summer, we're not angels.
No,
highly embarrassed by what happened around our own stadium for the final and stuff and behaviour of people in London and that. So we know we're not angels. And we also, if we ask for these punishments, we have to be prepared to know that that's going to come back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it will take a lot for England to fix a security issue at Wembley now. Surely they know
what's going to happen.
I mean, I don't suppose when we play Andorra on Sunday, people are going to be fighting to break into Wembley. Mm. But they've got to know that they have to work on the security system and Wembley Way, because we can't be having them scenes again we saw during the final. Yeah. So we're not angels. We're not just pinning the blame on everybody else. We know there's a racist element to English fans even. So if we ask for it the other way, we got to be prepared that it could happen to us as well.
Yep.
But we're not talking about one or two people making a monkey noise in the ground here. We're talking about hundreds, maybe a couple of thousand doing it together. No. You got to go. Get out.
Well, let's talk about transfers, James, because we saw the end of the transfer window.
Yep.
And that's it now for everyone.
The last few hours were boring, weren't it? Did you not think after the brilliant summer of transfers, looking at news 7-8 o'clock at night on Tuesday night was like, oh, this is shit.
I was expecting
fireworks. I think everybody has this idea that, like, suddenly at 10 o'clock, there's going to be this, oh my God, they're going for him. We didn't know that at like 10 o'clock at night. The thing is now, compared to the days with Peter Odd and Wingy turning up outside Loftus Road and stuff, there's so many good journalists who are so clued up. For a story not to be anywhere and just be under the radar and bang, is so unusual now. Mm. I mean, that's why the Danny Ings to Villa one was so shocking. Because it just wasn't even
came
a rumour about it.
Completely.
Exactly. These days now, there's no keeping anything secret or anything.
No.
And that's why I think it always begins to feel a bit, I mean, there's certain loans happen at the death and you're like, you wake up the next morning, oh, Cameron Carter-Vickers went on loan at Celtic. I didn't know that. Yeah. But otherwise, in terms of big transfers, no. And you hear, apparently, Donny van de Beek got denied a loan to Everton at the death.
Right.
As an example. Quite why United haven't just let him go and play football somewhere, I'm not sure, because where's he getting in that team?
No idea. And he's a real talent as well.
Tell me about it.
I don't know. Difficult. A lot of ins and outs. When you actually go into the listings, whether it's on the Premier League or Sky or whatever, it shows all the ins and all the outs. And you're like, actually, hang on a second. There's been a lot of outs for a lot of clubs as well. Like I was looking at Arsenal's list of outs as a start, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of players that were there last year that are not going to be there.
You haven't heard half of them, though.
No, but then there's quite a few that I have. I'm like, okay, there's quite a refresh happening there. But you know what? Should we go reverse alphabetical order talking about the clubs?
If you want to do that. Yeah, I just want to kind of...
Let's go Z to A.
I kind of want to highlight some of the new ones that, people might not have heard of. I don't think we need to go through everybody's business. No, not at all. Or we'll be here all day. Wolves, I think disappointing window. A lot of unhappiness from Wolves fans in terms of the lack of backing for the manager. I mean, essentially, they've bought Mosquera, who we haven't seen yet. Trincao was in on loan. They've changed goalkeepers, and they bought an unproven forward in He Chan Huang, who, well, I say bought, he's actually coming on loan from Red Bull Leipzig. His goal scoring record is seriously underwhelming. So if you suddenly thought, oh my God, there's a 5.5 million forward, he's going to start for Wolves, I suspect he's probably not, and he's just been brought into beef up the squad or sell some shirts if you want to be negative about it. His goal scoring record doesn't tell me that there's anything there. I think it's been a disappointing window for them. I guess the good news is they held on to the likes of Neves, Traore. I spoke on Tottenham about the 30 million bid from Tottenham for Traore, which was never really going to get accepted. I mean, it was testing the waters for something further down the line. There was a serious interest for them in Renato Sanchez. But apparently he's out injured for a couple of months, and it might be something they revisit in January.
What about West Ham? I mean, the two big names...
Let's talk about them again. It's about them on Tuesday, mate.
Yeah, they're not really the big names, but it's still Vlasic and Kral were the last-minute.com signings.
I have to say, having a second look at Vlasic's numbers, they're very good, you know.
It's decent.
That we never know what attacking returns in the Russian Super League is going to return to the Premier League, but his numbers are good, right? It suggests an attacking return to like 2 and 3 or so. I mean, if he can replicate in the Premier League, he's what, 6 million? He'll be in everyone's team, won't he?
Yep.
I don't think he's going to go straight in, though, do we? I
mean, no, definitely not.
Very much going to be a watch and wait. It probably needs an injury for it to open up for him. I think Zuma's a great signing, mate. I really, really do. I think that's top signing for you. And Crowell, as we discussed on Wednesday, gives you a bit of
backup
beef that you definitely needed in that midfield area with the Europa League campaign coming up.
Yeah. The social media admins at West Ham cannot wait for Crowell to pass it to Soufal to cross it in for Souček to score. That is going to, they are all going to be having a wank when that happens, mate, because they fucking love this checkmates. Everything is checkmates at the moment. So wait for that to happen, and every admin at West Ham is going to be having
it. Instead of getting a Jamaica shirt with Antonio, why don't you just get yourself a racist Czech Republic shirt instead?
Nah, man, the Jamaica shirt, man.
Get yourself a Slavia Prague shirt.
No, thank you. Should we talk about Watford? There's a few signings coming to Watford with Premier League experience. Josh King, Danny Rose, Ashley Fletcher. They've all played a bit of Premier League.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, Moussa Sissoko is probably the most interesting one in terms of...
Why is he not on the list?
He is right at the bottom, mate.
Not on the... interestingly, not on the Sky Sports one.
Oh, well, maybe I just forgot about him. I'm not looking at the Sky Sports one. I really think he's an interesting 4.5. I don't think it's impossible he's in my squad by next week, actually, depending on what happens with injuries and what I need to move about from an FPL perspective. I think he could be the one at 4.5. He's going to play right at the midfield three and be allowed to go in some of their better-looking fixtures, of which they do have a good immediate three coming up in Wolves, Norwich and Newcastle. Many of the listeners might not have heard me say what I said on the SkyPod in terms of being quite impressed with Peter Otebo.
Yeah,
who's there on loan from Stoke, who's the City midfielder. I thought he had a pretty decent game at Tottenham on Sunday, actually. And I think he kind of glues them together. I think he'll be quite important. And I think that's probably one that's gone really under the radar because people go, oh, you've got a player in from on loan from Stoke. Like, what's that? But I think, yeah, he's the glue in there. Sissoko will play to the right. And then the other midfield position is probably up for grabs amongst a load of players that they've got in, including Ozan Tufan, who's coming from Fenerbahce, Jurej Kuku, who got favouritism originally, who'd been bought from Parma but had missed out. They got Imran Lauzer in from Nantes. These are all quite similar players who are probably competing for one position. Obviously, Emmanuel Dennis was signed from Club Bruges. A number of these forwards that we highlighted in pre-season, the 10 forwards, a number of them have left, including Troy Deeney, who's gone to boyhood club Birmingham, Surge. You'll be pleased never to see him again, I should imagine.
Yeah. Tottenham, obviously, I don't care about Troy Deeney at all. I thought he was going to Scotland at some point, but no, he ended up at Birmingham. To be fair, I mean, he did, is it 11 years he was at Watford? It's a long time to be at one club, so I can understand difficult for him to leave, but who cares? Christian Romero and Emerson Royal are the big name signings for you guys. Obviously, Brian Hill and Galina and so on are going to be in the wings in the background. What price did Emerson come in FPL? Was it 5.5 or 5?
No, it's 5, same as Reguilon. So, and he'll offer competition to him from an FPL perspective.
I think 5 is interesting when I see how Spurs play. And obviously, Romero's going to settle in as well. Defensive signings never really get you off on the edge of your seat or thinking, yeah, but they were important signings for you guys, if they perform, of course.
Yeah, look, priorities was definitely some defensive reinforcement, I think was fairly obvious. So that they've spent 70 million on a centre-back and a right-back in Christian Romero and Emerson Royal. Can confirm, by the way, Davinson Sanchez out of Tottenham's match at Crystal Palace in game week 4. And obviously Romero is as well. You may or you may not have heard, Suj, but there is some threats. Remember this Tottenham and Aston Villa deal struck up with Argentina?
Yeah.
That they were going to play the first two games. Well, now they're there, Argentina seem to be changing their mind and saying, no, they're going to play all three games. Which, if they do, will rule Emi Martinez, Emi Buendia, Christian Romero and Giovanni Lo Celso not only out of game week 4, but out of game week 5. As well, there is a big row brewing. Brian Gill, we needed some sort of attacking reinforcement. Bale needed replacing, right? I guess I wouldn't call it a like for like, but in terms of squad numbers, we spoke about this on Wednesday, that the makeup of the squad, actually, although there's 5 players in and about 25 players left, from a first team perspective, looks very decent. And Tottenham have managed to get a hell of a lot of, similar to Arsenal actually, managed to get a hell of a lot of high earning wage players off the books. Obviously, there's the mutual termination of Serge Aurier, who I don't think it will happen because Arsenal got Tomiyasu. But apparently Aurier wants to stay in England.
Yeah.
And obviously he's available on a free transfer now, should anyone want to pick him up. And Arsenal's been rumoured. He's obviously been pictured knocking about in Arsenal shirts in the past and stuff as well. So, I mean, listen, that won't go to hatred like you know who. I'd just laugh if that happened.
Yeah. I saw it in a WhatsApp group that I was in that someone mentioned, and I said, to be honest, they're both bonkers, so it would be a good fit.
Yeah, could be.
Let's talk about Southampton. The two big signings from an FPL point of view that offer any kind of interest, probably Livramento and Adam Armstrong, both because they're cheap and have broken into the team and are decent.
Yeah. The one that might have missed people by, there was a new signing on deadline day, or certainly in the 24, 48 hours or so before the window shut. There's a player called Linkau, who's been bought from Torino. He's a centre-back.
Nice. You pronounced it well. I would have called him Lianco.
It could well be. I ain't got a clue. I just went with it, right?
Linkau.
Lianco. That can rhyme with a few other things, can't it? He's a centre-back. Now, he's been basically first choice for Torino over the last couple of years in Serie A. So we spoke about they had to do something defensively. Now, this player, other than those who watch Serie A, most of us don't know anything about him. But I presume he'll find himself quite quickly into the first team as a 4.5 million defender. One to watch. They've obviously still got horrendous fixtures. Livramento and Armstrong have, I was going to say, improved the squad. Armstrong is not an improvement on Danny Ings, but given them additions that they definitely needed. They are still a good side with the ball. It's without them that we'll have to see how the Ankau fits in and if he solves some of the problems that they've got defensively.
Mm. Norwich have had a pretty deep. I don't know why I'm jumping to Norwich.
Because they're the next team to go to.
Wow, so. There's no one in alphabetically between N and S.
Okay. Who do you want? Portsmouth?
I don't know.
You might get Queen's Park Rangers next year if you're lucky. I don't suppose Oldham Athletic will return anytime soon.
No. They've got a number of players in, but it feels like they've kind of plugged gaps and strengthened and reinforced and done quite well.
Quietly, they've had quite a good window. And a lot of these players, like Rashika, Lys Melu, Solis, we haven't seen yet. With the fixtures they've had, we can't really make a judgment on them yet in terms of is it going to help them try and survive. I think they've beefed up the squad. The one positive-ism is they have added. Like last time they came out, they didn't do fuck all, did they?
No.
They spent like 600 grand on Sam Byron or something. It was literally, wasn't it? So, I mean, they've got 7 or 8 players in who can potentially have an impact for the first team squad. And I think the notable one is a player they've got in on loan for an FPL perspective in the immediate. They got done towards the deadline is Matthias Norman have got in on loan from FC Rostov in Russia, which is where David Bentley went and played for a little bit. Now, Mark, FPL Badger, our Norwich correspondent, thinks that the addition of him, once he's in the team, could release Billy Gilmore to play a little bit further forward. So that's possibly a notable one for those who've got Gilmore sitting on the bench or thinking about wild carding at the moment. His appeal, Gilmore, might go up a little bit, actually. The one to watch for me in the next couple of weeks is Milot Rashica, who I'm convinced will get some attacking returns. I don't know if it's going to be enough to represent FPL interest, but I think he's the one I want to keep an eye on in the next few weeks is Milot Rashica.
Yeah. Newcastle United... could be argued, and I think their fans possibly would, had a crap window.
Did you ever watch the goal films?
I did, but I didn't remember the name of the character or whatever. His name was Santiago Munoz, right?
Yeah, he's basically bought the same player.
And they've got Santiago Munoz, a 19-year-old Mexican. But to be honest with you, I mean, the only signing that's of any FPL interest or going to really break into the first team consistently is Willock. Other than that, bits and bobs, mate. I mean,
their squad looks exactly the same, basically.
Yeah.
From the squad that finished last season, they haven't really lost anyone. When you look through the 20-odd players that have been released or gone out somewhere, I mean, literally only names that people will know there, I think, are Florian Leyoun, who's gone to Alaves, and Matty Longstaff's gone on loan to Aberdeen. They're the only players that people have even heard of, I think, outside of Newcastle. So the squad looks the same. Apparently, on deadline day, Bruce was trying to do his own things and got told no. Apparently, he'd struck a deal to get Hamza Chowdhury in on loan from Leicester.
Yep.
And they were like, no.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's suddenly the first kind of signs of a clash between Bruce and the hierarchy at Newcastle. Graham Jones is no longer working with the England squad, by the way. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
That's probably more good news for Newcastle. I still think they'll be all right, because I think they've got goals in their team, actually.
Yeah, with Callum Wilson at any time, right?
So essentially, it's exactly the same team as last season, basically. Ronaldo, I've never heard of him. We're not going to talk about him.
Manchester United?
We'll talk about him on Monday. I can't bother to talk about him anymore. Mm. I've done it to death. I did a video for the advanced tiers yesterday. Highly recommend Mark and Az's analysis on Black Box. Absolutely. And Mark goes into ridiculous detail and theory. And you might not agree with everything he says.
But at least it makes you think.
Yeah, absolutely. Really.
When you look at United and City, I mean, it's all about quality, not quantity here, isn't it? It's like Sancho, Varane, Ronaldo for United.
Greenish. Don't forget Tom Heaton.
Okay. Tom Heaton and Scott Carson. Shout out to them. But with City, it's just Grealish. And that's it. But we know about these guys. And then you look at Liverpool, Konate, and that's
We can skip all these because we've done them to death. Mm. I mean, I spoke with Dan on yesterday's Clash of Correspondence about Liverpool's lack of transfer activity. And he said that he's someone who's kind of been in support of FSG because his outlook on it has been, look, they appointed Klopp. The club went on to win the Premier League and the Champions League. to be wanting them out is not necessarily the right thing. Sometimes, again, you're better the devil you know. But he really is leaning into the FSG out camp because it just looks like they've decided not to spend money. They're not even getting linked with anyone.
No.
You know, you get nonsense news stories all the time. Like Tottenham, every summer, we're buying 100 players. Mm. I didn't even see anything the last couple of weeks that suggested Liverpool were going to buy anyone until the night before deadline. There was rumours about a big bid going in for Dwight McNeil and a loan offer for Callum Hudson-Odoi. If Roberto Firmino was ruled out for a heavy length of time, we think it probably won't be, although we don't know yet. And therefore, they decided not to.
Mm.
So, but then again, when we went through the squad with Dan on Thursday, like you've basically got four new centre-backs, Konate, Matip, Gomez and Van Dijk. They have got competition for Robertson now. There isn't competition for Trent. Harvey Elliott feels like a new player.
Yep.
They've actually got Minamino's back at the club. Now, I realise he's probably not to the level, but actually it's another body that they didn't have for the last 4 months of last season. So the squad's all right.
Mm, I think so too. Leicester managed to sneak in Ademola Lookman on the last day. And yeah,
this is a strange one.
I mean, he did well at Fulham last year.
He did, but end
not
product,
a penalties.
No, end product not really enough. And I just look at him competing with Harvey Barnes. And I think there'll only be one winner there. Now, look, they've got European competition and stuff as well. They've let people like Dennis Pratt's gone on loan to Torino and stuff. Yossi Perez is obviously suspended and stuff. Perhaps in terms of bodies, you could say they're a bit light going forward. But they've got Iheanacho and Daka. When the fuck are these two guys going to play, right? So I felt like Lookman, a strange one for me. I really like him as a player and stuff.
Yeah, they think he's got a level to go up still.
Maybe.
In ability, and maybe Rodgers thinks he can get it out of him.
I just don't see him being more than an impact player. Also, it is obviously perhaps what the makeup of the squad is, you could argue, is missing when Barnes is absent, is someone who can carry the ball for them. And maybe that's what they're thinking. Look, if we lose Barnes for 2 months like they did the end of last season, okay, we've got a replacement player who can carry the football for us.
Mm.
Other than that, I wouldn't see him starting regularly, to be honest.
No. Another winger that I was surprised by the transfer fee massively is Dan James coming into Leeds. 30-odd million quids. It's a bit of money.
It's the going rate for a proven Premier League player now, and you're buying from someone who doesn't need to sell specifically as well. And obviously, he falls into British quota. There's a number of reasons why that price
is young as well.
He's crappy, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he really is fast. He can go, but he's crappy. Now, whether he can develop, time may tell. I suspect he's such a busy little player. I think he's probably quite suitable for Leeds, actually. Be interesting to see if the Leeds fans take to him after. Do you see the video they were singing to him game week one?
No.
You're too shit to play for Leeds. But this goes back to a story where, and I didn't realise this, Andy Martin told me on before we recorded COTC, that they signed James a couple of years ago. He was pictured holding up the Leeds shirt and everything, that picture circulating online. And then the deal fell through and he went to Manchester United instead.
Oh, okay.
So there was a lot of anger from that as well. So Bielsa's wanted Daniel James for a couple of years. He wanted to get him originally from Swansea. So it shouldn't be something that we're particularly surprised that has happened. The other bonus for them is they've held on to your squad. It doesn't look like there's been any big bids for Phillips or Rafinha. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have had to be monstrous to take those players away this year anyway.
Yeah. Rondon. He's always lurking around a transfer window somewhere, Solomon Rondon. He's ended up at Everton.
Ricky Saunders can make his FPL team name proper now, can't he? Instead of this Rodon stuff he's got going on. He's likely to be available, I think, actually, for game week four, because I think he's not gone to play for Venezuela, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah,
but yes, he's obviously going to be back up for Calvert-Lewin. I think he fits the profile of backup striker, will accept that role within the club. I think he's a player Tottenham have looked at over the last couple of years as well to kind of fill that backup role to Harry Kane. Good in the air, strong player, dominant. Is he going to start regularly? No. Will we see him play up front with Calvert-Lewin when they're looking for a goal late in games? Yes. probably. Everton fans are spitting mad with their window, mate. Because the reality is, and this is exactly, Sean was so spot on Correspondent Week when he said that they're now paying for the mistakes they've made in the transfer window and they can't spend. And I think it's proven when you look at the
Townsend, the Gray, Begovic were free to pack a crisps between them, and Rondon, nothing.
Gray looks like a great deal for them, don't get me wrong. But in terms of Everton to push the next level, and we think they're in this mess and now trying to build a stadium, I think we're going to find they're going to have a very, very tough few years, Everton. And to go back to another point Sean made on Correspondent Week, again, he's right. He's got a manager in there that can manage expectations and knows how to get the best out of what he's got. So if Everton do well this year, I think it will be because of Rafa Benitez. Mm. They're going to be in trouble if they have a lot of injuries, I think.
Big problem for Everton as well is now what do they do with James Rodriguez? Because getting him out of the club seemed to be a priority. No one's taken him.
You integrate him.
You have to, right? With that level of wages and that level of experience and skill, you can't just let him rot. So I think he's going to be coming back in. And he hasn't played nearly enough football.
Well, yeah, I think he's been injured, and he gets injured every 2 weeks.
For whatever reason, he's not been playing. Listen, he's not playing.
He could play against Burnley on next Monday night, suddenly get 5 goals, and I still wouldn't buy him, right? Because it's 1 or 2 weeks he's going to get injured. But for those fixtures like that, Burnley at home, Norwich at home, where you need a bit of creativity in the 10 position, you play him, don't you? Mm. Particularly in the home games, you've got to get something out of him if he's still on your wage books and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that Benitez won't, right? We haven't actually seen the scenario yet where Benitez has gone, nah, don't turn up, mate, or... He hasn't been available for selection. So one to keep an eye on. No chance of having any interest in him for FPL.
Of course not, yeah.
Gray and Calvert-Lewin are the two to look at.
Mm. Palace. So picked up Edouard from Celtic, and obviously Will Hughes came in from Watford as well. Hughes
never had a great window.
Will Hughes is a good player. And now I look at that central midfield. If it's Gallagher and Hughes... And I'm thinking there's a bit of an engine room there. Like those guys will put work it. Yeah, I like that as a central midfield. And suddenly, I was quite down on Palace, but I now think with those two experienced players coming in, and Hughes is not hugely experienced.
Gallagher's a baby.
Gallagher's not huge. He's 23, but they've got Premier League experience. They've got games under their belt. I think they'll be all right. Now, Edouard is an interesting one. I always have this asterisk that comes from anyone that's played in Scotland and scored goals, because there's just no way of knowing if it will translate at all. So maybe. It can't be as bad as Benteke.
For every Virgil Henrik van Larsen. Dijk, Victor Wanyama, Henrik Larsson. I feel bad that I named 3 Celtic players there. There are Jornal and Boom songs. Sorry to name a Rangers player, but it's who came into my head. There is never a way of knowing. I mean, his goal scoring record, as you would expect for a good player in Scotland, is extremely good. It did tail off a little bit last year, whereas the year before he was kind of getting returns of more than 1 in 2, if you include assists. It dipped below that line last year, but I mean, he was still like, you know, 5 attacking returns in 6 or so. It's very good. What is it going to look like at Crystal Palace? Well, one, you're not playing against Scottish Premier League defences anymore. And obviously he's not playing in the team that's going to dominate football matches anymore. So how it converts, I don't know. But he's a good player. He's not someone I've seen a lot of, but he's always struck me as someone who's a really good, willing, in-behind runner, happy to run into the channels. I actually could see him possibly playing as one of the wide forwards, possibly on the right. It might be something people are not expecting. I wouldn't be that surprised if they played Edouard and Zaha off of Benteke. I think might be a possibility. It's a good addition to the squad, right?
For sure. He could get someone coming off the bench and stuff. Yeah.
He could get 10 plus goals for them. They have a really good fixture swing after they play Manchester City, which starts in game week 11. And I think we'll be talking about Palace around about that time. I'm in agreement with you. I feel like what they've done is to fix the spine. Like Anderson and Gehi, as long as they're not exceptional, will be Palace's centre-back pairing for the next 2 or 3 years at least. When I say, because if they're exceptional, they'll get bought by someone else, right? Gallagher and Hughes in front of that, Edouard up front. The spine of the team is now so much better.
Sol Niguez at Chelsea, back up to Kovacic and Kante and Jorginho.
Yeah, it was the one area of the pitch, really, where they didn't quite have two players for every position because it was Kante, Kovacic, Jorginho. They were missing one in there, really, unless they were going to integrate Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who is, unless I missed him, I mean, there's a lot of Chelsea players gone out on loan, but I don't believe Ruben Loftus-Cheek is one of them. Neither is Ross Barkley still at the club, but you definitely don't expect Ross Barkley to be involved. Hello, Harry. Thanks for joining the podcast. So I think Sal Niguez they needed someone in there. And I think that's why it's a loan with a view to a permanent move. He's a good player, very good player. Like, he played a lot for Atletico's title winning team last season. His attacking returns have gone down and down and down as the years have gone on. And even though I think it's 5.5, which might catch people's attention for FPL, it shouldn't. Like, don't waste the Chelsea spot on Sal Niguez. I wouldn't expect him to be a starter. Kante keeps getting niggles. I think he's out for a couple of weeks again. I'll let you speak while a child screams.
Well, let's wait and see what happens with him. Burnley, obviously Max Cornet had been mentioned for a while and eventually that deal did get done. Conor Roberts joined from Swansea as well. You've got Aaron Lennon, who's been there before and has got a bit of experience. Still underwhelming, though, I think. From a Burnley, still a bit underwhelming.
At least they did some business. They did spend some money at the end, and you could argue, you know, look, they haven't cashed in on James Tarkowski, for example, who we know has only got a year left on his contract. So they have spent some money. There was a fear that there would be none. Cornet can play basically anywhere, but I looked at the report on Burnley's website introducing him, and they've identified him as a wide player. So I think that's where we can expect him to play. And I think it's that quote that's probably stopped him being priced up as a defender, actually.
Yeah,
we do think he'll play as a midfielder. I'm not sure he'll go straight in, but obviously Jack spoke to us in the summer and was like, look, we've got McNeil and Goodmanson. We've got no one else to play wide. 6 million, you are not going anywhere near that, are you?
Not.
Unless he proves to be sensational. Mm. Conor Roberts is more the one to watch. He's coming at 4.5. It's reasonable. So he's in at kind of Taylor and Lowton level and stuff. And he'll definitely give Lowton a push for a starting spot. I imagine he'll get hold of it eventually.
Mm. Brighton, any thoughts on their transfer business? Simmer coming in late from Prague.
Well, he's gone straight on loan to Stoke.
Right, okay.
The one that's more of interest to talk about is Mark Cucurella. And I wanted to highlight him because I had a little look at some footage of him last night. Now, he's come in as a 5 million defender. As far deep as you'll see him is left wing back. I think, like, if they play a back four, you're looking at him playing left wing or attacking mid.
Right.
From what I've watched of him, this guy is not a fullback. He's not. So he's one to watch. There aren't a plethora of players who are OOP this year in FPL. He might be.
Okay.
He might be. I really think he's worth watching. They've had real balance problems when they've been without Solly March. And I think he's probably in competition with March for a place. He looks like Cucurella, and you won't forget this. He looks like the love child of Sacha Baron Cohen and Benoit Assuracoto.
I need to pull up his picture and do a face mash. And let's
he's busy.
Get.
He likes to take his man on. He likes to tackle. He's one of them who I suspect looks all energy and quality on YouTube, but actually when you watch him live, you realize his second touch is a tackle. I think it might be a bit like that,
right.
But he looks, he's definitely worth keeping an eye on. I promise you. He's one we need to watch over the next few weeks or so. Mark Cucurella, 5 million at Brighton.
Brentford, bringing in players that I've never heard of. So can have no value on at all. But they do find good players that are unheard of consistently, do Brentford. So
yeah, there was nothing towards the end coming in. I have had a brief look at, so Alvaro Fernandez is coming on loan from Huesca. And I thought, oh, I've missed that. Who's this fella? He's basically going to be backup goalkeeper to David Raya. So there's nothing that's happened at the end that you would have missed there. Squad stayed together as we would have expected it to. But it is largely the team that come up. But they've made a good start, right?
Five points is decent.
they feel like they've got a bit of momentum, and they may need to do so because after Brighton and Wolves have got four very, very tough fixtures where I suspect they might get their pants pulled down a little bit. But yeah, they've fixed certainly the bits that they definitely need. The one that we haven't seen yet, he's only played in the cup game for them, was Wan-Wissa, who was the poor fellow who suffered an acid attack, who was bought from Lorient. He's a wide player, really. And I'd suspect he might be one we spoke about. They might move back to a back four. I think while they're doing so well defensively, they just don't. But he might well get integrated into the team when they move to a back four, I think. He's 6 million. I think by the time he gets integrated into the team, he probably won't be. But then he has 0.0% ownership at the moment.
Aston Villa didn't do any kind of madness at the end at all on the deadline day, but then they did their business early.
It all makes sense, doesn't it? Think back to the Christian Perslow interview, the three players they wanted to replace.
Jack
Grealish. It all makes sense, doesn't it? It was the Grealish money all along.
Yeah.
A notable one is, you might notice on their last in, is Caleb Chukwuemeka.
He played in last game, didn't he?
No.
Oh, was that a different Chukwuemeka?
It's his brother.
Okay.
His brother, Carney, who was already at the club. Caleb's done quite well at Northampton. I know FPL Cobbler, one of our patrons, was sorry to see him go, but he's gone to join up with his brother. So not only do Villa now have two Ramses, they've also got two Chukwuemekas, as you were. I don't think Caleb's not been added to the game yet, and probably won't be. But Carney, who played against Brentford, is definitely a talent to keep an eye on. And the fact that they haven't bought in that area, let's say they have, they've obviously bought Buendia, but they haven't strengthened that other kind of central area. Carney will get some minutes this year, and he's a super talent. He really is worth keeping an eye on. Leon Bailey, we just haven't seen yet. And I know there's a player there. He will definitely make Villa better as well. But as I said to you on Monday's pod, I think the 4 points from their first three is very disappointing with what they had. And I think they should be a bit disappointed with it because of what's to come. And I think at the moment, we have to judge them as Aston Villa without Jack Grealish, which sounds obvious, but the data from last year tells us that without Jack Grealish, they were average.
Yeah.
And right now, that's what they look like to me.
And last but not least, Gunners, Takahiro Tomiyasu on deadline day, 6'2" centre-back.
So what's interesting, I think he's going to play right back, Suj.
Right. Yeah, he's right-sided.
He's a player I've become familiar with because Tottenham agreed a deal for him 2 months ago.
Yeah, and left him in the wings in the background as potentially.
And he was always going to be, if Tottenham couldn't get a signing done, they were going to buy him, basically. And I think if the Emerson Royal deal hadn't come about, he'd be a Tottenham player. The irony that Arsenal have obviously now picked him up. Imagine if we hadn't gone for Royal and bought Tomiyasu, Serge Aurier would definitely be going to Arsenal, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
So he's a very defensive-minded right-back. He has come in at FPL at 4.5, which I think he's worth watching. I'd spoke after the Brentford game about the criticism Chambers had got, and they'll need a solid kind of defensive right-back to get the best out of Kieran Tierney on the left-hand side. I think it's a very suitable signing. Interestingly, I was reading on The Athletic that Arteta has had a big role to play with all of the Arsenal signings, including Odegaard coming back, Ramsdale Ben White. Lokonga, made his debut for Belgium this week. So they've got a few in. It just feels like you look at it and you go, is that what they spent 155 million on or whatever it is? When you compare it to United have paid the same basically for Sancho, Varane and Ronaldo.
Yeah, I think the Ronaldo price is all a bit...
I realise as well that Arsenal, a little bit like Tottenham, needed to get a lot of players off the wage bill, looking to change the age profile of the squad as well, look towards the future because, I mean, to be honest, they could have spent 150 million anywhere and it still wouldn't get them in the top four this year. So I understand them having a future thing. I think the interesting thing is that Arteta was heavily involved, apparently, in those transfers. So they backed him and knew there was an issue potentially arising if they started badly where the pressure would be on.
Busy window, definitely been a very busy window. I think for a lot of these signings, there are many that are not going to break into the first team straight away. So we will get a chance to have a look at them. It's one of the reasons why I'm going to keep my wild card firmly in my pocket for another 3 or 4 weeks, I would say.
Yeah, it won't be coming out for me.
No, there we go. Patrons, I hope that's helped as a quick rundown on some of the players that you may not have known much about before the transfers of the Premier League happened. We're going to be back at you next week with a full regular schedule of content, Q&A on Monday. Your quiz is actually going to be on Tuesday, Tottenham on Wednesday. For all of you Sky players, a real final look at James and my drafts for a post-overhaul on Thursday. And a differential show preparing for football again on Friday. So thank you again for all of your support. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Have a great weekend. Cumulative, please, Manchard. Messi.